The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Kevin.
I'm Kevin, and I'm an alcoholic. First, I'd like to thank Dev for asking me to speak. It's funny because when he first asked me yesterday, my first response was automatically, no, there's no way. And, you know, after I thought about it for a couple of minutes, I realized what an honor and what a privilege it is to be standing up here sharing my experience. So I grew up in northern New Jersey, nice household, two loving parents, older sister. I lost my brother at a young age, which was very difficult for my family. And, you know, but we got through it. And so I grew up having, like, normal childhood. Nothing after that, nothing really traumatic. Had a lot of friends, played sports, and everything seemed to be, like, normal on the outside. But I always realized that there was something different within me. Like, when I was, like, hanging around a group of people, I always thought I was different. I felt awkward. I felt weird. And, I mean, that's what alcohol helped me with. It made me feel socially comfortable. I was able to connect with people. I was able to, you know, talk to people that I wouldn't normally talk to. So I had my first drink at around 13 with one of my friends. And instantly, once I took the first sip, I realized this is what I've been looking for. And so after that, like, high school came, I experimented with other things, and, you know, I put up the facade during high school that everything was okay. I was doing good in sports. I was doing good in school. You know, I'm doing fine, you know, even though my drinking was progressing. So I went to college in Philadelphia, and with the facade and the delusion that I was going to play lacrosse there and I was going there for academics, when I was actually going there just to party. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't care about school. I didn't care about lacrosse. I just wanted to party. I wanted to know who had what and where the next party was. So that's obviously went out of the picture pretty fast. I lasted about a year there and came home to my parents' house to go to school, you know, because I couldn't handle living on my own. I had to go back and live with my parents. So drinking just was obviously nonstop at this point. Other substances were involved, and I, like they say, when I drink, I break out in handcuffs, and that's literally what happened. That's literally my story, because, I mean, in the past 7 years, I've probably been to jail about 7 times, and, you know, I mean, coming from, like, the household that I came from, you would never have thought that I would have been in jail, and I relocated. I went down to Florida. I tried to get sober down there. I ended up actually getting worse, and I was in and out of treatment programs, going sober living houses. I tried it all, and none of it worked. You know, I didn't want it deep down. I was doing it for the wrong reasons. I was doing it for my mom and my dad. I was doing it for the legal system. So, I mean, like, it just got crazy, and I eventually went to jail down there for almost like a year, and for, you know, not alcohol, something else. But so I came back up here again, tried to relocate, went to my parents back in New Jersey, and of course I broke out in handcuffs again, and I got sent to a state run treatment center in New Jersey, and I was living there, and I was coming into the city working, and I had met my sponsor that I have now, and I wasn't completely honest with him. I was working with him, but I was still hanging out with old friends, had old behaviors, and, you know, I eventually relapsed. And so I got put back in jail and sent to another state-run treatment program in New Jersey, in Atlantic City. But I had already had the seed planted. Like, this guy had something that I wanted, you know? Like, everything about him, I admired. Everything. And I wanted to be just like him. I knew that I had no hope at this point when I was, like, I couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And after I met this guy, I like something changed, something clicked, and we started going through the book. I was coming in from New Jersey, taking the bus in about an hour just to come read the book with him, and I would, you know, it's like my life. I slowly started after I started working the steps with him. My life slowly started to change. It didn't change immediately, but like little things changed. And so I did a very thorough first step. That was very important for me because I had to get honest about what I had done, what I had used. I just had to be completely honest with him. And that was something that was very hard for me to do, to be honest. I mean, that's something I've struggled with my whole life. And I've always tried to put on this facade that I'm somebody that I'm not. And it's just like I did the thorough first step. The fourth step was extremely important. I had to get all those people down on paper that, you know, I had resentments towards and look at my side of the street. And, that was extremely helpful. But one of the most important things that I've done in my recovery is I've made amends to people that I never thought I would be able to make amends to. You know, I've made amends to girls that I've hurt. I've made amends to family members that never wanted to talk to me again. I was cut off from my family at one point for months at a time when I was living in Florida. Like, they just weren't going to be a part of the lifestyle that I was living. So, I mean, that's where my life went when I was drinking. I literally isolated myself from everybody. I didn't talk to any friends. I didn't talk to any family. And, you know, I eventually would end up in jail. That's what happens when I drink. So today, what it's like, I mean, to be standing here in front of you guys is an absolute miracle. I should be dead or I should be in prison for a very long time if I didn't get sober. And it's literally a miracle. And it's only because of my sponsor and me developing a relationship with my higher power that's gotten me to stand up here in front of you today. It really is. It's a miracle. But, you know, I call my sponsor every day at 8:10 in the morning. I don't miss a day. I do, even though he screams at me 90% of the time. It's literally like he screams at me. But that's what I need, you know? I mean, I'm that type of alcoholic. If I don't have somebody screaming at me, telling me what to do, like, I'm doomed. Because if I have a sponsor, oh, yeah, you're doing fine. You're doing great. Keep doing what you're doing. Like, I'll be like, oh, I can get over on this guy. Like, I'll just go do, you know what I mean? And, like, that's what happens in the past. And I start getting over on people and I start lying. And, you know, it's great to be up here. But like literally when they say, if anybody can do it, like if I can do it, you can do it. And like literally, cause I was the last person 2 years ago, I was in a jail cell and I never, ever would have thought of being here speaking at an AA meeting about being sober. I mean, this is literally the last thing I thought I would be doing. So, I mean, for me to be up here, it is literally a miracle. I mean, the 12 steps of the Atlantic group, I love. I love this meeting. There was something about this meeting that just drew me here. I would take the bus, sit in traffic 2 hours just to get to this meeting because there was just something about this group that really, really made me feel welcome. And, you know, the Atlantic group is the best. My sponsor, my higher power, the 12 steps. You know, I have a relationship with my family today. They want me to come over all the time. My sister, my nephew. I babysit my nephew now. 2 years ago, my sister wouldn't even let me see her nephew, and now she's calling me to like babysit. And it's just, I mean, it's like an absolute miracle to be standing here. I mean, that's all I got, guys.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Luce.
Hello. Hi, my name is Luce and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, what a privilege to be up here. I never thought I'd be up here. it's funny, a couple of weeks ago, because I sit in the wings and I was like, wow, how do people get called up there? And I was like, you know, I'll never go up there. And it's like, you know, Marla came up to me on Sunday night and I was like, well, that was weird. You know, I'm just, my first sponsor always told me the first time I was going to speak after my 90 and 90 to say a prayer just to help me relax because I was really nervous. So I just want to start out with, like, you know, Father God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. You know, I was told that when we speak, we just speak the truth, and it's our higher power talking through us. We're just a vessel. And, you know, like, I'm just looking out there and I see all these beautiful faces, and, you know, you guys are my family, and I'm grateful to be here. I started drinking young, well, not that young, 15, relatively young. I had my first drink at a family barbecue. I remember my brother-in-law gave me my first drink, and it was a Heineken, and I had it, and I really liked it. You know, I didn't get drunk because my dad was there, and, you know, I didn't want him to get mad at me. But I had my first drink, you know, middle school, and then till that point, I was an A student. You know, I came home with good grades because it was expected. You know, if you didn't come home with good grades, you catch a beating. You know, if you came with anything less than an E or whatever, you get a spanking, well, a whipped, basically with a belt. So you were just a really good kid. You know, we were the type of, we were expected to be good kids, and we were. You know, whenever we went out, we'd sit. You know, they taught us to sit with our hands like this, you know, just sit still. Gosh, how funny. can't help it. You know, you'd sit still, you don't talk, you only talk when you're asked to speak, you know, and that's how I grew up. And I remember just being full of fear as a little child, like always full of fear. I mean, to the point, like, I was laughing the other night, like, I'm in bed and I used to wrap myself, like, literally head to toe with my blanket because I felt like I was protected that way. Because I would be in my bed shaking. Like, I couldn't even go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. I'd pee on myself because I was too afraid to go to the bathroom. Like, I'd scream for my mother or my sister, and if they wouldn't come for me, I wouldn't go. You know, I would just sweat myself because I couldn't go to the bathroom. That's how much fear I lived in. And there was no reason for it, but that's just how I lived, you know. And, you know, I also, you know, I was born with a genetic disorder. Like, basically, like, I was born with no muscle on my, like, right-hand side and no, like, rib cage. And I was very angry at God and at my mother because I blamed her. Like, it was her fault and it was God's fault. And I shouldn't have been born this way. And I remember going to doctors, you know, and then went through surgery. And I had so much anger inside of me, you know. And I would, you know, it's funny, like, right before the meeting, like, I prayed because I was just like, you know, my truth, this is my truth. You know, this is something that I've hid my whole life. And I want to be free. And I was just like, God, if you want me to share this before the meeting, I'm going to get a sign. And someone came up to me, Ron, and he shared something with me. And what he shared with me was exactly what I needed to hear to know that I needed to share this, to be free, you know. And I used that as an excuse for drinking, you know. My excuse was like, well, you know, I was born this way. Like, you know, God is a bad God, you know, and all these things. And, like, you know, like, I would punish everybody and drink because I could feel sorry for myself. Like, that was always my excuse. And just to fast forward, you know, got into high school, and then that's when my drinking really took over. I just didn't care. I wanted to be a bad girl, you know. I grew up in a very Christian home. My parents were deacons, you know, was born again Christian evangelical church, Spanish speaking. And, like, we lived in church 7 days a week, you know, that was our life. And I hated it, you know. I hated it. I just wanted to be rebellious. I wanted to be a bad girl, you know, everything. I used to, you know, sneak out. My friend and I would each say that we were sleeping at each other's house, sneak out, go places, go hang out at the projects, you know, like with drug dealers, everything, you know, whatever we could do that was bad. I would cut out of school every single day. And I got put on probation, and eventually my parents found out, and my father would drop me off at school. I'd walk out the back, and I'd come in the front, through the back, come out the front, get in the car with a wad of gum in my mouth, so that he wouldn't smell the liquor. And from the get, I was a blackout drinker. I was a blackout drinker from the very beginning. Like, I just blacked out. But everybody thought I was fine, but I used to do a lot of crazy things. You know, I was the life of the party. And then just to fast forward, I ended up dropping out of high school, going into college, and then it was the same story over and over again. It was just over and over again. My parents shipped me off to Colombia when I was 19, and my drinking really took off. I would show up at my sister's house and, like, puke all over the room. The maid would have to pick me up from the vomit and clean me up. And, you know, they shipped me back because they couldn't deal with it. And then, you know, I turned 21, you know, kept doing the same thing that year. Forget about it. I could drink freely. Like, I was out 24/7, like every day that year. I was out, I think, every night that year because I was 21. I was legal and I could drink. Fast forward, I got pregnant when I was 22. I had a son when I was 23. And I was so depressed about that. And I got myself really integrated into church. I went from one extreme, from being this drunk to now being a Sunday school teacher, a worship leader, a youth leader. Like, it was extreme. It was very alcoholic. Like, I was just, like, sober for 3 years because I was so involved in church. Like, I had no time for anything else, but that's what I needed to keep me sober. The church fell apart. I ran into an old childhood friend. We got married after 6 months. I got pregnant after 6 months. I had a pattern, you know? I realized I was unhappy. My mom died that year. And then, like, I just didn't know how to grieve. And my drinking took off. And it was just crazy. Like, I thought I was 21 all over again. You know, I'm, like, in my 30s thinking I'm 21 all over again. Fast forward, my last year of drinking, I had lost my job. I was unemployed. And I was just drinking like a maniac. I, again, reverted to being 21, you know, at the clubs. Whoa, you know, popping bottles, everything. And my poor son would have to, like, carry me out of my friend's cars and carry me up to my bed. You know, he's a senior in high school dealing with his 40-year-old drunk mother, you know, that thinks she's 21. And he'd be like, you're going out dressed that way? I was like, yeah. He's like, my friend wears that. So what? You know, he was so embarrassed, you know, rightfully so. And Labor Day weekend of 2012, I threw this big barbecue, invited some important people, and I told myself, I'm not going to drink. I'm all the things, you know, drink water, do this, do that. The moment I took one drink, it was over. I opened my eyes. It was the following day, and I was like, devastated. I was like, oh my God, what did I do? My friend called me. She's like, if you don't go to AA, I will never speak to you again. We've been friends for 25 years, but it's over. Like, she was literally, like, ending our friendship. I was speaking to this guy, like, I was dating this guy, and he, like, also sat me down for 3 hours to tell me everything I did. And that's what clicked. Some total stranger that I had just met, like, a month ago that told me everything, my truth. So I went to my first AA meeting in Long Island in Nassau because I knew a girl that went there. I was calling her. I was sitting outside and calling and calling. She wasn't answering, and I was pissed. I didn't want to walk in by myself. I walk in, and she's the speaker. So I got to hear her story. So, you know, they told me 90 and 90, don't drink and come to meetings, people, places, and things. And I'm like, okay, so don't drink before I come to a meeting. They're like, no, don't drink, come to meetings. I was like, oh, okay, I got it. You know, so, and I was like, well, 90, 90, that's crazy. You know, they're like, you're unemployed. You can make it. You should go to more than one meeting a day. So just fast forward, you know, I was the type of person that I'd like come in through the, you know, late, walk, leave early, sit in the back, quiet, wear a hoodie. I didn't want anyone to know. You know, I was in AA. Oh my God, embarrassing. What a loser. You know, then one Saturday night, I used to go to this midnight meeting. Courtney M. was there at that meeting, and they, I guess, told her to approach me. She approached me, and she asked me if I needed a sponsor, or she offered to sponsor me. Long story short, I came here at beginner's meeting Thursday night. I remember walking in upstairs and seeing hundreds of people, and I was like, whoa, I'm out of here. This is not the right place. And they're like, where are you going? I'm like, no, I'm in the wrong place. They're like, no, your stay is AA. You're in the right place. Long story short, they were giving out coins, and Courtney went up to give out the coins, and I was like, oh, damn it. You know, like, I have to go up there. So whatever, I did, you know, and then she's like, call me at 9 a.m. Okay, so just to fast forward quickly this last minute, I'm on my third sponsor. I was very defiant. I didn't want to do the step work. I was so afraid of making amends. I was so afraid of, you know, writing out my fourth step, my first fourth step. I put nothing in everything. I stopped doing the work. Eventually, I got to my now current sponsor, Alexis C. And when I got to work with her, I was just willing. The willingness was there. And she always takes me back to the book. You know, I'm always, every day my ritual is, you know, wake up, pray, meditate, read my devotional, read pages 86 to 88, call other women. When I'm feeling out of sorts, call other women. Just call. And they drill that into me until you feel okay, because until you start thinking about yourself, and just make it to meetings. If I feel like picking up, you call someone and you show up, you go to a meeting, and people have been there and shown up to meetings with me when I felt like picking up, and I've done that for others. And that's what we do here. Thank you.